Trevor Maddich will join me next. He's with us every Monday on the Monday Morning Football Show. We'll get his take on what happened yesterday at FedEx Field as we continue. Don't go away. And there was your touchdown scoring for yesterday for Washington. Period. End of story. They got three field goals. The Eagles scored touchdowns, and they won the game 20-16, and Washington is now officially out of the playoffs. Trevor Maddich is with us every Monday, and it's good to say Happy New Year to him. Happy New Year, Trevor.
Happy New Year to you too, Andy.
So it seems like we've started these conversations about games too many times this year with the old Bill Parcells line, no medals for trying. But the fact of the matter is, they had the ball at the 20-yard line of Philadelphia with 30 seconds to go and a chance to win the game, and they didn't get it done. Do you take anything from that and give them credit for it?
Well, credit's an interesting word, because you never want to get into a position where you say, yeah, we played hard and we didn't win, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You never, and they're not in that position as well. But you got to realize that they play 65, 70 plays on offense, another 65 or so on defense, and every one of those plays matters too. Every one of those plays is evaluated. And they didn't make the plays they needed to make, and you can point to a couple of them. One of them was what you said, that last play that ended in an interception. They were throwing into the end zone in the final minute with a chance to win. They had two fourth downs on the 2-yard line and the 1-yard line on defense that Philly was able to score a touchdown. If they would have stopped them on either one of those, it could have made the difference in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fourth down and one, or fourth and two, going in to score, because Washington's defense stopped them on the first three plays on the 5-yard line on one of those drives and from the 4 on the other. So they did really well, you know, on those plays. So why didn't the other ones go well? And so you point to two or three plays in this game that ended up making most of the difference, and that doesn't erase the effort and the success that they had on many of the other plays. But ultimately, you don't want to point to that and say, yeah, but it's okay, you know, because they had the play to be made. They didn't make the play. Now, that throw in the end, the interception of the end zone, probably would have gone to their regular tight end, Logan Thomas, who's taller than John Bates, who's more experienced in the NFL than rookie Bates, and who may not have stumbled and fallen down, which, according to Taylor Heinicke, led to that interception. But, you know, you also need to point to who they have available and how well those guys played,
mm-hmm.
based on the potential. You know, did they play 90% or 95% or 100%? As well as they possibly could have, they just weren't quite good enough because they weren't the regular starter. Those are things you have to evaluate as well.
They also didn't have Ricky Seals-Jones, who was knocked out by a cameraman. I think you were on the team when Gus Frerotte knocked himself out in the wall celebrating a touchdown, right? Weren't you on that team?
Well, yeah, I was. I believe I was on that team. Either that or I was just out off the team. But
yeah,
Gus scored, ran in for a touchdown, and he ran into the back of the end zone, and
yeah.
It was too high to do a Lambeau leap, so he headbutted the stadium. People always point that he injured himself doing that. But you've got to realize that the stadium took the worst of it.
Yeah.
That sounds a pretty hard noggin, you know?
That's right. Well, and yesterday we saw a railing collapse. I don't know if it was related to that. It's a long time ago. But, you know, these strange things happened at FedEx Field. And again, yesterday, it's one of those games where you just look back and you go, well, you know, maybe they could have won it. But as you say, just too many different types of plays. Moving forward, and we've, you know, been talking throughout the year about Taylor Heinicke. And you've been pretty strong in saying that they don't really have to reach for a quarterback. Yesterday, after two really bad performances, he came back and was solid, despite the interception at the end of the game. Are you still of the belief that they can ride with Heinicke next year?
I think they can ride with Heinicke until they've got a guy that they like better. He's got to fix some mistakes, and those mistakes generally are when he is doing what he does best, which is escape pressure in the pocket, make plays off schedule. He does that at times, and it's spectacular, and it really just gives you such hope. But then he'll do it, and he'll throw the ball someplace where the ball's in the air, and you're going, Taylor, why, mm-hmm. why? And it ends up getting picked off. Those are the plays that he needs to stop. But that's the kind of play that, you know, he can, I think, relatively easily stop making. In other words, when he scrambles around, he doesn't like what he sees. Instead of trying to make the play anyway, just throw it away. That's the difference between Taylor Heinicke being a guy that people are talking about, not necessarily as the quarterback of the future, because his arm just doesn't have the strong arm. right?
Right.
It's okay, but that's his weak point. But if he would scramble around and not like what he sees and not throw it there, throw it away or just run and punt, right? If he would do that, we'd be talking about him, or at least this way, fans would be talking about him differently. But that lack of arm strength, ultimately, I think would keep him from being a long-term QB1. But here's the thing. I think he does enough to win games, enough to inspire the team, that if anybody beats him out next year, it will elevate the quarterback position from where it is now. And if nobody beats him out, he has to do that one thing, which is when he feels like he has to make a play, if it's iffy, don't try to make the play. Mm-hmm. And if all he did was that, we'd be talking about him in a different way.
But is there any doubt in your mind that they'll bring in a veteran next year? I mean, don't you think that's going to happen?
It's possible. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is out there
tantalizing
the possibility that they could snag him. And the thing is, when this team is healthy, if they add another receiver or two, I mean, Curtis Samuel would be very nice to have him healthy. But if they were able to stay healthy, then it would be interesting to see what an elite quarterback could do. Aaron Rodgers wouldn't want to go to a team that that gets him out of Green Bay but is not ready to compete for a Super Bowl berth.
Mm-hmm.
He would only want to go to a team like Brady did that already has a lot of great players and is really a great quarterback away from a Super Bowl. That's what Brady did with Tampa. So it'd be interesting to see that. But, I mean, Russell Wilson from Seattle wants out. I mean, Carr from the Raiders might end up mm-hmm. being on the market. So it'll be interesting to see what they will do. I would not, however, mortgage the future to bring in a veteran quarterback for a few years. You know, I would wait until I could draft the guy that I think could be the guy for 10 years rather than rent a guy for three, and then all of a sudden I'm down two first-rounders and two second-rounders.
Yeah, we'll get to the crop that's coming out this year. Trevor, of course, covers college football for ESPN. I got a couple of questions to ask him about that as well, but we're talking about the Washington loss yesterday to Philadelphia as Trevor Maddich joins us on the Monday Morning Football Show. Defensively, Philadelphia team, which is not a really explosive team, but they ran over them the last time they played, something like 230 yards. What did you think of the defensive response yesterday and the way they controlled the Eagles?
I thought they were fantastic. I mean, they response is the right word, Andy, because they were just obliterated by Dallas. It was just one of the most humiliating all-around performances I can remember seeing in the NFL for a lot of reasons. They came out against Philly. Philly was missing their starting running back, Miles Sanders, due to injury, but they still have one of the best running quarterbacks in the league in Jalen Hurts, and they still have that offensive line. And Washington cut their yards per carry in half from the first time they played. And I think that was a real testament to their grit, their mm-hmm. toughness. I mean, they were embarrassed last week. They were embarrassed the week before by Philly, who ran for well over 200 yards against them. And they came back in this one and they fought hard. And they were successful for the most part in this game. So I think that the defense overall will look at the plays that they didn't make that could have helped them win, like those two fourth downs inside the five, inside the two, actually, where they allowed a touchdown. That's what they will see. But I think you can also look at kind of the trajectory that they had a chance to wilt here against a very physical downhill running team, and they didn't. They rose up, and they did much, much better than they have the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Culture. You played for organizations which hadn't won. I think Patriots before they started winning, Colts before Manning got there, and then finishing up with Washington. Is there a culture that exists in an organization? This one has had 23 out of 29 years missing the playoffs. Does that affect a locker room at all?
No. I don't think the past affects the locker room in so much as these guys don't care about the guys that were there 5 years ago, 10 mm-hmm. years ago. It doesn't matter to them. What does matter, however, is if there's an ongoing organizational culture that makes it hard for them to win. And for a couple of decades, that was the case.
Yeah.
And it was coming from upstairs. And I think that has largely been rectified. And so I think the culture has been turning around. I think the culture of this team, for the most part, appears to be quite good. Because what is culture? Culture is the prevailing the culture of hard work. Mm-hmm. You do the grind in practice, in the weight room, all those things. That is largely driven by the players in the locker room. Guys like John Allen, right? And Brandon Scherff. And that, I think, is in a very good position. Unselfish. I think that is also driven by some of the selfish positions, wide receiver, et cetera. And with Terry McLaurin out there at receiver as a team captain, which is weird to have a receiver as a team captain, right? But he was at Ohio State as well.
Yeah.
And I think that the unselfishness that you want to be in your locker room as part of the culture is with this team. It's there. The resilience that Ron Rivera talks about, that when they get knocked down, they fight like crazy to get back up. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't, but they don't wilt and they don't go away. They fight back when you hit them in the mouth, as Philly did the first time and as Dallas did really hugely. Then they fought back. They lost this game against the Eagles yesterday, but they fought back hard. That resilience is also part of culture, and I think what they need now is a locker room with enough talent that's healthy enough for the culture to actually show up in terms of wins.
Yeah, and hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, but hopefully next year COVID isn't a factor. I don't know how much it influenced what they did at the end of the season, but they were one of the teams hit the hardest, and it certainly didn't help them. So, yeah, hopefully next year.
But the thing is, yeah, and it's not just a matter of, well, gee, who's available and who's not. That's huge. But it's also who practices and who doesn't.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Let me hit you with a couple of college things. Your colleague Kirk Herbstreit created some headlines when he said, you know, players opting out of these bowl games, maybe they don't love football as much. And then we had the situation with Matt Corral where he injured his ankle, and I don't know what that's going to do to his draft status. But where are you on that conversation, and do you agree with what Herbstreit said?
You know, I have tremendous respect for Kirk, but on this one I see it completely differently. Mm-hmm. I think every guy has to make his own decision, and every decision is different.
Right.
There was a running back out of Baylor, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, that had been suspended by his own team for a while. And finally he just decided that, no, I'm opting out of the bowl game. I'm not going to play. And I don't think he ever did make it in the NFL. I don't know if he even got a chance. I don't think he got drafted, because the circumstances were such that the NFL needed to see him bounce back from that, and he chose not to even try. At the same time, you've got a guy that's a first-round draft choice. You know, you could take Kenny Pickett, who's, you know, said to be the first pick, first quarterback taken in this draft. He's out of Pittsburgh. And he opted out of his bowl game. And on the one hand, people might say that he is not being loyal to his teammates or to his organization, his, you know, his team, by not playing in that game. But I think the other side fits as well. His teammates and his program need to be loyal to him and say, look, thank you for all you've done. This is an exhibition game. And we don't want to try to compel you and pressure you to compromise your future. Because you look at a guy that, like Pickett or anybody else in the first round, for example, if they're able to stay healthy from the end of the season until they sign the contract, then they've got guaranteed millions of dollars, life-changing money. And all you have to do is stay healthy. And so they don't do things like bull riding or running with the bulls in Pamplona.
Yeah.
They don't do things like motorcycle jumping, right? And some of them think, you know, I don't want to have 2 weeks of bowl practice and then play in a bowl game where I don't know who's trying to make a name for themselves and might dive into my legs. Unless it's, you know, if it's a playoff game, it's different. But, you know, on the exhibition games, I am fine with guys making a decision like that. And I think we saw Matt Corral. We sure hope he's okay. You know, and he would tell you, I'm sure, that he would have made the same decision to go play with his teammates. He was out there in the locker room, or excuse me, on the sideline on crutches to support his team, because that's what it was about to him, right? But at the same time, I do not begrudge someone who either played with an injury that doesn't want to exacerbate that injury heading into the combine and the NFL draft evaluation process, or guys that say, look, this is an exhibition game. This is not a risk that I feel comfortable taking. And I think their team and their coaches should say, okay, we appreciate everything you've done. We support you going forward into what you think is your future.
Yeah, also, these bowl games, the ones that aren't for the national championship, a lot of it, as you know, is for the next year's team. So it gives a chance for a guy who's probably going to be the quarterback next year to see what he can do in a game like that. So
yeah, strangely enough, it really does do that. I mean, you want the win in the bowl. Some teams need the win in the bowl because they're trying to build a program and they need that extra win so they don't have a losing season at 6-7 instead of 7-6. And then when it comes to, they need to be able to tell recruits, hey, look, we've been down for a while, but we are a bowl champion this year and you can come here and help us do even more.
Right.
For a lot of teams, that's really important. But for others, you're exactly right. I mean, what they're looking to do is get more experience for younger players. So, it's not like, you know, there's a lot of moving parts and it's kind of complex. And to me, it's more than, gee, do you love football or do you not?
Okay. This is going to change maybe this week, depending on COVID. So we'll just save a prediction for next week. But you were not alone in thinking that Michigan had a chance to beat Georgia. And with the way that Georgia won that game, does that lean you in a direction now to think that maybe they are the best team in the country right now?
I think Georgia is you know, one of the top two, obviously.
Yeah.
But the way they won that game, I mean, they physically pounded a very physical Michigan team. But Alabama will look at that tape, Andy, and they won't see problems. They'll see opportunities. Where Michigan finally figured out a way to try to move the ball was not to play 11-on-11 against the Georgia defense. It was to get one-on-one up the sideline. And they hit some of those one-on-one deep throws. Others were there to be hit, but they couldn't connect on them. And then one of them was an interception, but I thought it was defensive pass interference. But the point is that Alabama will see those opportunities at one-on-one matchups up the sideline, and they'll think, we have the Heisman-winning quarterback. And even without their second receiver, John Metchie, who's actually the leading receiver when it comes to total catches, not yards, even without him, they've got the kinds of receivers that can run up the sideline and have an opportunity to make those kinds of plays if the quarterback can drop it on them. So I think that makes this a really interesting matchup because it's not just a matter of Georgia annihilating Michigan. There were places that Alabama will think that they can attack. And Alabama, for their side of it, I don't think their win over Cincinnati really translates very well to Georgia because Cincinnati had the best secondary that Alabama faced. They have two NFL-caliber lockdown corners and then good coverage guys at the safety position. And Alabama didn't even try to throw very much against those corners. They didn't even try. They just kept handing the ball off and ended up rushing for, you know, the running back had 300 yards rushing, I think. So it was a pound-you game against a smaller Cincinnati defensive line. Well, Alabama's not going to do that against Georgia. They didn't the first time around. They did it with the pass. So I think you've got to look to the first game against these two, between these two in the SEC championship game, where Alabama won, not by running the ball, but by throwing the ball. And I think this game will revert to that mean, and that will be the challenge for Georgia's defense. Stopping Alabama's run isn't going to win them the game. They have to stop the pass.
Very good. We'll wrap up the Washington season next week and get your prediction for the title game as well. Always good to talk to you. Thanks, Trevor.
Thank you, Andy.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.